thank you for tuning in to the Stuff I Heard podcast. I'm your host, Joshua Peak. This has been a busy week so far. We are in the first week of October 2023, and there's lots of great stuff that's happening this week. This past week, we got to see the finale of the Ahsoka series, season one. Very, very good episode, very good series. But I want to talk about what I don't like. Okay, because I want to discuss the good, the bad, and the ugly of this, because there's a couple of things that, you know, talking to my Star Wars friends about this, about opinions of what they saw, what they thought, we're kind of all on the same page on this. Okay, so first of all, if you haven't seen it and you don't want any spoilers, just skip this part. But if you are into it and you want to discuss it, let's talk about it. So first of all, you get to see a live-action fight scene with Sabine Wren now using the Force. Like, she reaches out for the lightsaber. When all hope seems to be lost, she uses the Force and brings the lightsaber to herself to kill a zombie version of a stormtrooper, which we kind of figured was going to happen, especially with the Night Sisters involved and the flashback scenes of Clone Wars and how this was used from the Night Sisters. And it sort of unveils this new plot of how Thrawn is going to take over and be a bad guy again. Much like the Game of Thrones, they're going to wreak havoc on the battlefield with undead zombie stormtroopers, and then after the battle, resurrect all of the dead to then fight with them as well. So that'll be fun. I know that sounds like a lot to sort of digest, but that's pretty much how the story's going to go. Now, Sabine Wren using the Force, we all knew it was going to come, but they sort of fast-forward a version of her using the Force, of her, I'm having trouble even using any Force, and now I can bring my lightsaber to me, to all of a sudden she's helping Ezra Bridger do a Force push-pull situation of him doing the Force jump, trying to get onto a ship, and then her doing this tremendous Force push thing that gives him another 100 yards worth of leaping ability. And I'm like, okay, that seems like a big stretch for her to be able to do that. But also, weirdly, she is connected to him enough that I buy into it. Like, some of my friends that were talking about it were like, come on, like, she's supposed to advance in the Force that quickly, that fast, to be able to do that sort of a move and have that sort of energy. Maybe we're supposed to like remove our disbelief and things and just go along with the story, right? So the real problem I have, and this is my personal problem, is Ahsoka, okay? The star of the show. Dun, dun, dun. We've been conditioned to watch her in these battles where she faces countless stormtroopers and countless droids and countless situations where even facing off against someone like Grievous or Maul, and she's able to not only handle herself, but do it very athletically. Now, here's the challenge, is you're taking a live action person, Rosario Dawson, who's in her 40s, and you're saying, all right, we want you to physically be able to do the things that this cartoon did. That's a hard stretch. It's a very hard stretch. They still, in this final battle thing where you have her, Ezra, and Sabine using lightsabers, doing the Force, using all of the tools they have available, she looks slow. I mean, get it. It's a person, and it's hard to make a person look like you can make it look in an animated series. But, I mean, come on, do some tricks with photography or something. She's got to be more. It's just, it's lacking, okay? Not to take anything away from Rosario. She is the part, she's looking the part, she likes the part, I get it, you know, and I'm sure she also was like, come on, we need to figure out a way for me to be faster, and there's just no way. So, I mean, that part I'm just going to have to watch the rest of this and just be slightly disappointed at the speed of things, because if you watch the animated shows, one of the things that stands out about Ahsoka is her speed and agility. And it's hard to match that in live action. Now, I've talked to some friends about this, and we all kind of agree that if they ever bring in a Saw Ventress character, she needs to be extremely tall, extremely thin, and almost a freak gymnastics person, because the athletic things that she does is just unparalleled. Only by Ahsoka could it be comparable. But you can't have her being an average 40-something-year-old woman playing this part. Like, you have to have an exceptional person playing Asajj Ventress. If they do that character, if they do a flashback, if they do the Clone Wars, if they do any of that stuff. And if they go back and they do a live-action Clone Wars, you got to have this young girl who's supposedly, you know, played her in the show already. You got to have her in some serious gymnastics classes, because otherwise the pacing and the speed of things is just going to look clunky, like it did in this final battle scene. Now, I will say I do like the story arc that they took. I like the fact that you got the bad guy who's now gone on to the galaxy that we know. He is approaching Dathomir, which is supposed to be very strong with the dark side of the Force and the Night Witches. And of course, then you're going to have them raising the army of this undead stormtrooper thing. The separation of Ahsoka and Sabine is okay with me. Like, I'm fine with that. I'm looking forward to them having a different story outside of being connected to everything else. Like, to me, this opens up a new chapter of where they can go with these characters. That way we're not acting clunky through the situation of, you know, who's going to hold the Darksaber? How's this going to fold into the Mandalorian series? This part, to me, explains why they're not in any of the stuff involving Rey or any of that other stuff with the Skywalkers. So you have time for them not to be there, which is essential. I think you have to have that. And they've done that. So this opens up an avenue for the story to continue a different way. Ray Stevenson, of course, has passed away. He played Baylan Skrull. He and Shin Hati are on the planet there together. All four Force-sensitive users are now on the planet. And this opens up a new avenue for conversations and action to happen. Now, we do see a mountain at the end of the father and the son. The daughter, of course, is basically, for all intents and purposes, dead. But the mountain is supposed to represent the fact that the father and the son are still out there somewhere. And the question is Baylan Skrull in search of the Mortis God's powers? Is he wanting to take on the role of the son? Is he being called by perhaps the mother, which is the goddess of chaos, Aelith? So there's going to be a lot of questions answered in the upcoming stuff, but, you know, I'm excited for it. I like everything about it. We now have Ezra reconnected to the group with Hera and Chopper, and hopefully we'll see them reconnect with Zeb at some point so that we can continue a Rebels reunion with them. This also opens up storylines to go in different directions with all of these characters. I'm excited for it. I think they're doing a great job. You definitely have a lot of people who are invested and involved and care. So they're going to try to put their best foot forward to make sure that everything looks like it's supposed to. So looking forward to that. I enjoyed it. Let me know your thoughts. What do you think? Am I right? Am I looking at this correctly? You know, what did you like or not like about this season or this final show of the final finale of the season one? So anyway, we are kind of blessed with a rolling Disney Plus from one week to the next into a new season of Loki season two. Now, this is kind of interesting because this is the first Disney Plus endeavor that they've done with Marvel, where this is the first of a season two of anything that they've done. Now, Loki season one, I totally loved. I thought it was awesome. I thought the pacing in the beginning was weird, but also we're supposed to be kind of weirded out because we're not supposed to know what's going on, just like Loki doesn't know what's going on. Now, season two doesn't do that. Season two starts right off with chaos. I mean, because we left in the brink of chaos, basically Sylvie being a version of Loki in another version of a timescape thing. Broke the timeline by killing He Who Must Be Regained. So he was keeping the sacred timeline all together. And then without him there, it opens up the avenue for a bunch of versions of him that are pretty much up to no good. They all want power. They're all power hungry. They're going to battle each other in their own universes to try to take power. And it's going to unravel all sorts of storylines and all sorts of characters, which is, to me, a lot of fun because you're going to get a lot of let's just say situations where multiple people have played the same character and now they can interact, or now they can work together, or now they're going to work against each other. And it's just, it's fun for the viewer. I know as a writer and as a storyboard person and as a person who has to figure out how to make all this stuff look real, this is a huge challenge. But luckily, we're here wherever the technology exists for them to do that kind of thing. I don't know how they're going to do it live action. I mean, Loki seems to have a good feel on how they're going to progress with this on screen. I've mentioned it before where this is how the Spider-Verse has really done well with their season two. The animated portion is really the only way they could show the things that they showed during that. Now, I think they can do this live action now. I think that the technology has finally caught up to where they can actually physically show you how all these different universes coexist. And you get to see a version of that in this first episode. In Loki, we get to meet, I got to look how to pronounce this. His name is Obi. Ouroboros? O-U-R-O-B-O-R-O-U-S. Obi. They meet Obi. He's played by Ki Hui Kwan. Of course, you know, you guys may remember him from Everything All at Once, Everything Everywhere All at Once, and also Goonies. He was the little kid with all the gadgets. He's an adult man now. But yeah, after he did the Everything Everywhere All at Once movie, Kevin Feige apparently was one of the first people to reach out to him and say, hey, I really want you involved in our Loki project. And we get to meet Obi right off the bat. And I thought they did a fantastic job in this first episode of not only giving you information as to who this character is, but basically you realize very quickly that he has been there since the beginning of this sacred timeline. Like, he is sort of the maintenance department and has built what helps maintain the sacred timeline. And they did a really interesting job of showing us time travel and how it interacts with people in live action and in an area of the TVA where this sort of thing isn't supposed to happen. It takes out the butterfly effect. It takes out all sorts of things of that nature, but it do it in such a way that it makes it very easy to follow and very entertaining. I think Obi stole the show in the first episode. Tom Hiddleston playing Loki is doing a fantastic job. Even Owen Wilson. I mean, I've never really been a huge Owen Wilson fan, but I think he's great in this. He plays just the right character of being this guy who sort of knows everything, but really doesn't know anything, but is trying to figure it out and trying to learn and also just being true to himself. He's, to me, in a way, he's sort of the Winnie the Pooh version of, you know, oh, well, I'm here. And look at this. This is happening. He's kind of narrating. That's it. He's narrating. He's saying out loud the things that we're all thinking, but doing it in a way that's entertaining. So, yeah, I think I just came up with that. So anyway, really loving Loki season two so far, and I'm here for all of it. So they're going to have a weekly show, and I'm going to give you guys a weekly update of what I think. Now, let me tell you about a show that popped up on Netflix this week. Well, not this week. I don't exactly know when it first debuted. Kind of recent. Eat the Rich, the GameStop Saga. Okay, this is a TV miniseries. It says here in quotations that it came out in 2022. This is a documentary. Now, it's only three parts. Came out, let's see, September 28th, 2022. I didn't see it when it came out. I'm watching it now. I just watched it. Three episodes. This is basically how during COVID and during January of that year that everything sort of seized, basically GameStop as a company was having trouble. GameStop, if you don't know, is a video game store. They usually exist in these strip malls or at malls themselves. And they had sort of made a name for themselves when my kids were younger, because they were the place to go if you ever wanted to physically play a game. Now, if you wanted to try a game out, a lot of times they would have one on demonstration. You could just walk right up, grab a controller, see how it plays. If you liked it, you'd be tempted to buy it, right? Like, and then if you if you wanted to buy a new game, you could bring in old games and trade it in for a certain value and buy the new game and get some money back for the game that you turned in. And they would turn around and they would sell it. Kind of like you do with used cars, they would do that with used video games. And they had figured out a way to make money at this situation. Now, all of that was working fine until the internet caught up and people could suddenly buy video games online or download content online. And so people stopped going to GameStop. Now, here's the interesting part is GameStop was really on the way of finding bankruptcy, finding their way out the door, becoming obsolete. And across the nation, tons of these stores were completely closing up. Here in Florence, South Carolina, we had one that I had gone to with our kids. And going up there, they had signs on the door, big yellow signs, liquidation, everything must go. And I was like, oh, really? GameStop is going out of business? But also, like, Amazon was kicking off and Walmart was starting to sell things online. And you could play video games on Nintendo.com or whatever to kind of see what it's like. And there were all kind of YouTube demonstrations. And I was thinking to myself, well, you know, it was an era. How about that? Just like Best Buy, just like Toys R Us, you know, this stuff just goes away eventually because technology moves forward and everybody has to find a new way. And they didn't find a new way. Well, funny thing, this documentary basically breaks down how there were hedge fund companies that looked at them going out of business and realized there was a way for them to cash in. And this documentary very easily shows you what it means to bet against a company succeeding, what it means to bet on a failing company and how it profits them. It's weird. I don't fully understand it. I'm not a financial person, but watching the show, it made sense. Here's the thing is GameStop hits a sentimental reason for a lot of people that are now adults. And when all this stuff started happening, there were people that had gone online on Reddit and on TikTok and Twitter and had decided, you know what? I like GameStop. I don't want it to fail. I'm going to put some money into it. And then certain people started getting involved, like the guy who started Chewy. Chewy was a pet store supply place that was online, apparently started by a guy. And I think he used to work for Amazon. I'm not exactly sure on that. But he basically outpaced Amazon selling similar products. But his difference in his company versus Amazon was his attention to customer service. Like one lady talked about how her cat had passed away and they had sent flowers. And, you know, there's different people talking about the extra level of care that he gave as customer service to customers. So they were loyal to Chewy. Well, this guy, I don't remember his name, but he got involved and he bought stock in GameStop. And he said, I think we can turn this around. Well, immediately, like all the fans of GameStop are like, well, yeah, this guy's involved. Of course, they're going to get turned around. He's the customer service guy. He knows what he's doing. I got faith in the stock. Let me invest some money in the stock. And there's a lot of people that invested. And I think at one point, the show says that it was at like $4 a share. And so you get people that are suddenly buying in like, you know, $25,000 worth at $4 a share. And you get to see the whole story of how hedge fund companies were still betting against it. And everybody who felt passionate about GameStop was like, you know what? Let's just bet against the house. Let's bet against hedge funds. And they were using Robinhood. And you get to learn as the show goes on how Robinhood was sort of responsible for all of this, the good, the bad, and the ugly of this, and how it all happened. It's fascinating to watch. I don't understand a lot of it because I'm not a financial person. I don't fully understand how the stock market works. Listen, this makes sense to a lot of people. I'm not one of those people. But they did a good job of showing the characters, some of the characters that were involved in this and highlighting information. And because it's a documentary, they did their research and it's still entertaining as a documentary. So I highly recommend checking out on Netflix, Eat the Rich, the GameStop Saga. Now, apparently they came out with a dramatized version of this, and it's called Dumb Money. I haven't watched it yet, but now that I've seen this, I may end up watching it. So yeah, if you've seen that, let me know what you think. I'm kind of curious if it's worth watching. So kind of hit me up on that. All right. Now I want to share something I think is good for everybody. And this is a movie that came out on Netflix that I thought, yeah, I don't really care about this, whatever. But I watched it anyway. Okay. I was looking for something to kind of take my mind off of the world and just sort of relax and maybe have a laugh. And Adam Sandler historically does that. He has gotten to where he makes some serious films and he makes comedy films, and comedy's where his gold is. Some of his more serious stuff I really like, but you know, it hits kind of hard. So I was looking at this and I thought, well, this looks kind of funny, and it had his family in it. And I thought, well, that's interesting. It's called You Are So Not Invited to My Bar Mitzvah, and it stars his wife and his daughters. And I loved it. I was happy watching it. I was happy all the way through. His daughter, Sunny Sandler, steals the show as Stacey Friedman. She is awesome. All of the cast is great. Sadie, the older daughter, she plays Ronnie Friedman. She is great. His wife in it is the lady who sang the Frozen song, Idina Menzel. Yeah. His actual wife in the show plays someone else's mother. But anyway, they're all great. Okay. Sadie and Sonny both have a future in acting. Definitely Sonny. But the story was great. The bar mitzvah in the Jewish faith is supposed to be the coming out party of becoming an adult. And normally it happens at your 13th birthday. And they explain all of this in the show. And Stacy's best friend, Lydia, they dream about their bar mitzvah and how they're going to be really cool and be best friends forever and all this other stuff. And they're sort of arguing about a situation that comes up, and things get misconstrued and they sort of fall out of friendship, but then find each other again. I think the overall story of the movie is about friendship and how your family really connects to you and how your friends connect to you and how it's important to remember the things that count, especially when you get distracted by what you think you want is sometimes not what you really want. So I highly recommend checking it out. I love this movie. I will probably watch it again. You Are So Not Invited to My Bar Mitzvah. Now, it's hard to find it as a hashtag or as a thing to take a picture of to put as a post. But I found one, and I put it on my Instagram. So, yeah, check it out. I enjoyed it. All right. How much time we got? Oh, look, we're at 22 minutes. That's good enough for me. I've sort of been going through the gamut of watching things and trying to see what I'm interested in, see what I like, see what I don't like, you know, give you guys a little bit of feedback on this and hopefully brighten your day, give you something to look forward to. You know, we're all in our own little world. We're all struggling to try to move forward. We're all struggling to try to figure out what we're going to give our attention to. And maybe some of this stuff will help your day or help your interests or find you something interesting. I don't know. I'm making all this crap up as I go. So just like you, maybe we'll figure it out together. If you've got something I need to watch, let me know. If you're like, hey, I think you'd really like this, should you send me a shout out? I'd like to check it out. Has anybody seen the movie The Creator? I saw that advertised. It looked really cool. Haven't seen it yet. Kind of curious about it. But yeah, what's your feedback? Just kind of curious. Did I forget anything? I wrote myself notes. Let's see. No, it looks like everything. Balin Skrull, Shin Hati. It's going to be interesting to see what happens. How are they going to recast Ray Stevenson? I don't know. But yeah. I'm available, Disney. If you just want a guy that's got a larger body with a beard, I can look very stern. Give me a red lightsaber. Come on. I'm just saying. I could be mysterious. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. I hope you have a great week. And don't forget to give us a shout out. Thumbs up, rate, review, subscribe, share with your friends. And as always, cue the cow.
Cue the cow. Moo, baby.